Welcome to the See-Through Design Podcast, where we have an open and honest conversation about design. Hosted by myself, Kaz Cusimano.
And myself, Liam Jackson.
Welcome to the See-Through Design Podcast.
Welcome, everyone. So today we are lucky to have the awesomely talented type designer, Nico in Osanto, all the way over in Switzerland. And he is also the founder of the foundry Newtype. So when was it? It was a few weeks ago now. Got a notification on Instagram about an Instagram Live with Typo Circle and yourself. And that was the first time I'd heard of you. And it was a really interesting interview. And obviously went and checked out your work, loved your work. You know, you've got amazing, obviously, type skills, and gave you a follow. You kindly followed me back, and then I reached out to you, and then you even more kindly said you would send me the type specimen book that you spoke about in the live, and your awesome business card as well. So thank you for sending those over.
Oh, thanks, man.
And so I just said to Kaz, you know what, this guy's amazing, his work's amazing, so I want to get you on.
Absolutely.
So here we are.
And we've been stalking your work and looking at the stuff that you've been doing all week. So it's we've had a bit of a fanboy moment, really, just kind of doing a bit of background research into your business and the work that you've got on Instagram, which, as Liam said, just looks brilliant and phenomenal. But I'm super excited about this conversation. I know, Liam, you are as well, because I just feel that there's so many kind of like grey areas in font design that could be ironed out for designers. And I think this is a bit of an enlightening moment for them. And I think that's at the start of their career, but also more seasoned designers that would probably learn something from this podcast. So it's our first podcast on font design and typography as such. So in that sense, it's kind of new and exciting, and I think we just kind of like dive into the questions that we've got that we've been eagerly wanting to ask you for the last week since we know you were coming on.
So I guess we'll start. It'd be good to start with, you know, little Nico. How did you get into design and kind of typography?
Well, it was into typography. This was during my graphic design school study, when I, in the first year, we had this typography course, and I was really fascinated by the letters, the letter forms. So the first year I already started to draw letters, and to draw serif letters actually, because at the time I found them more impressive and more interesting to do, because they looked more complex than sans serif typefaces. So I started to draw some serif letters, and then I've done more and more, and I never stopped doing this since then.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. So a lot of, I guess, you're obviously a creative from a young age to go to, you know, study it. And have you always been fascinated by typography?
Typography, maybe not, because I went to graphic design school because I was quite good in drawing. Mm-hmm. So this is why at first I didn't go to the graphic design school, because I wasn't accepted to this school. So I went to fine arts, mm-hmm, for 1 year, and then I applied again in this graphic design school, and I was I was accepted the second time.
That's amazing.
Awesome.
I've seen.
Just before that, I was doing like a fake graphic web design of a fake website for fun, mm-hmm, you know, with GIMP or just amateur graphic design school, graphic tools.
Yeah, so definitely like playing, experimenting with different disciplines before,
exactly,
before you found font design. It's, mm-hmm, interesting actually, because I remember on that Instagram Live with Typo Circle, there was some pictures showed of your drawings of watches.
Oh yeah,
and exactly, they're so good. Obviously, we can't show them here, but super, mm-hmm, they're super detailed. I believe it was Biro Drawings, and Kaz is actually a big watch fan as well. So
yeah, I love watches. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So making a kind of watches, because I'm a big collector of watches.
Oh,
a
awesome.
Lot of mechanical watches, because actually I'm fascinated because the not so much into modern watches, but in maybe what we call haute horlogerie.
Yeah.
The high end, because when it's done by hand, it reminds me of my works. There is someone behind and not just some machines that do everything. And
absolutely. And being, you know, in Switzerland as well,
exactly.
The land and the home of mechanical watches is just amazing. I mean, you're right. You know, I share a passion of watches. I probably, my horology, I can't even say the word, but my in-depth knowledge around the mechanics of a watch isn't necessarily, you know, I don't know a lot. I know what I like in terms of design. I do find that watches are a great link to what we do as creatives. I think they represent, almost in a world of digital, this analog aspect that is, excuse the pun, timeless on your wrist.
Yeah,
it's phenomenal, and I don't think the watch market can be a complete diversion from the conversation, but I don't think the watch market will ever be destroyed by smartwatches. I just think technology is very disposable, whereas mechanical is more long lasting, has longevity, and there's an artisan feel about it. So, yeah, it's. I'd love to see those images. You're going to have to send me them. I'd love to just see that, you know, the level of drawing, because I haven't seen it. Liam has, and it would be amazing.
Yeah,
to see.
Yeah, we'll send you.
Oh, I appreciate that. It'd be great. Yeah, no. So, I mean, it sounds like you've experimented in UI design. You've experimented with graphic design. You've done a foundation in fine art, and with that amalgamation of disciplines, you've kind of brought them to the table. And mm-hmm. you were inspired by the letter forms, which are. You know, I guess ancient symbology to a degree, isn't it? Really, letter forms kind of come from that time long gone, where you have the ability to take something and keep embellishing and innovating on top of what's been done before. So, I guess you know, how do you get started in creating a font? What's the first thing you do?
Well, the first thing I do is, you know, it's impossible to do something maybe completely new. You have always to have references. You need to try to do something that's at least different enough than what exists already, because if it's not different enough, why not just take the typeface that would look almost exactly the same? So you need to try to do something different, but with those thousands of typefaces that already exist, it's quite difficult, actually. Mm. So you need to spend a lot of time to try to find new shapes of some letters. Generally, in the lowercase, I like the E and A letters. You can always do a lot of things with those two letters, because they are so... the drawing is so particular. You can give a lot of personality to these two letters. To one typeface can have a big personality just with those two letters, and the other letters, of course, they are important, and you need to find solutions, or to try to find new shapes, new forms to do something original with those other letters, because basically it's always the same characters. The letter S will always be the letter S, but sometimes you can do different curves, different proportions.
So you're kind of looking at existing things out there, maybe something old that you want to bring back to life, and then then look at the proportions of how yours might work. So are you sketching a lot? Is that what your first kind of stage is? And if it is, I guess it is, but if it is, are you starting with, I know you said you like the A and the E, I guess the A because you have like a double stacked A oh, you have the singular, you know, shape A. But is there, for like people maybe looking to get into type design, is there a specific like routine that you do of letters? So if it's AE, would then you have other letters that always follow that, or do you just go with what you feel is working at this at the time?
Yeah, generally it just depends. When I do sketches of new design, it just depends of the letters, because I don't have a methodology where I just start with one letter in particular. I can start, for example, with an S, a D, or if the N. It's just that when you have one letters, generally you need to fit with every other letters, because it depends if you want to do a display typeface or a text typeface. Mm-hmm. But generally, for text typeface, they need to be compatible each other.
Yeah.
So it's you can just for example just start with a few letters, and if you see that those letters are interesting, well, you will spend months and months to design the rest of the alphabet and the hundred of glyphs that exist in the typeface.
Mm-hmm. And I guess the intricacy of doing that, because you're not only creating shapes, but then you're also thinking about weights and proportions. Are there kind of fundamental rules that you have to follow? Like, for example, we know that an S is an S, we know that an A is an A, and obviously mm-hmm. there's a lot of typefaces that have already existed before. I guess what I'm trying to sort of understand is, do you kind of take a typeface, like say Helvetica or Futura, do you create it outlines and then do you start to manipulate it? And then is that creating something new? Or do you have to draw it from scratch and, just use those as sort of visual mind references, if you like? How is the best way to approach it?
Taking a typeface for like you said at the beginning, no, I never did that, and I don't think a lot of people do that because this is not my good method. I think for creating a new typeface, you need to start from the beginning, mm-hmm. to draw all the letters yourself. But of course, you will have influences. For example, Radical typeface is largely influenced by LL Brown or Euclid. But the curves and the junction, for example, between the curves and what we call in French it's a fu, the colon, for example, is very different between those typeface and my radical. So it's different enough for me to have a point to make a new typeface.
Mm-hmm. So it's got kind of, you can definitely see the influences between the two that and that's the same with design in general anyway. We're taking inspiration from different places and we're adding our spin on it. And sometimes it's mm-hmm. the subtlest spin that creates something quite unique or, dare I say it, original. And also as well, like this, the function, I think, as well in design, and like I think it's key to remember that we are designing to communicate and not just illustrate. So we have to kind of take that balance of, is this functional? Because I suppose if you try and be too weird and wacky, you're going to end up with something that isn't functional, not legible, and not fit for purpose. It's definitely a fine craft. And something I definitely want to have a stab at doing, and Liam has actually started to create his own font as well recently.
I saw one picture on Instagram. Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely a display typeface, mm-hmm. and I mean, I know the intricacies of font design, and so I'm just trying to create something that I can at least finish. So just all caps, capital letters, just mm-hmm. do the 26 Latin and then some simple punctuation. Just going back to your process in terms of sketching, do you do very rough sketches, or do you do very finessed, kind of almost finished drawings and then vectorize from that?
Yeah, no, it's really rough sketches, and then I don't scan the those sketches. I just draw, and I try to, because it won't be the same anyway, because the sketches are still sketches. So it just gives you the idea, and then from this, once you have a few interesting letters, you can start doing everything else. Yeah, it's because it's important to start. Just do not spend too much time on the sketches and start on the very soon on the computer, because from this you can you can have all the letters, because the spacing is very important too. Mm-hmm. Because generally the spacing, it should not be spacing and drawing, because the spacing is part of the drawing actually. Mm-hmm. Because you know it's black and white and white and black, so it's the opposite. The space that's formed around the characters is also the character.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, the positive and negative. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yes. That's really kind of, yeah. I mean, you're thinking about so much, like I say, the way that the kind of how the letters interact with each other. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, and that's why the sketches, this is good for shapes to find original forms, but for a typeface you need to think about everything, you know, the details about spacing, and you can change more easily the proportions.
Yeah, I guess there's a lot of back and forth as well. Mm-hmm. In between, I mean, that's what I found from my, you know, small doing, obviously nowhere near your level, but kind of, you work on a letter, you're happy with it, you work on the next mm-hmm. one, and then you're like, oh, I have to go back and fix that other letter now, because
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
I've done some curve that's different or some proportion. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's I guess it's exactly like making a handmade watch. It's that kind of level of detail, like the, you know, minute details are kind of key in the function and everything.
Detail, that's a good word, because that brings me on to another question, actually. Detail, and let's clear up some details, I think. And let's try and understand the terminology, because I think it's something that we designers often, you know, don't really use the correct terminology. So obviously we've got typeface and we've got font. Can you explain the differences just for the listeners?
Yeah, actually, I think the thing is, the font is a particular style in a particular weights and size, because we take this the name of fonts from when it was still in the metal. Mm-hmm. So it was the typeface. I think it's just a name for the family.
Okay. Yeah.
So if, for example, Helvetica in size 22, Helvetica Light in size 22 is a font, mm-hmm. and Helvetica Regular in size 26 is another font.
Brilliant.
From what I remember, but mm-hmm. It can be confusing even for me.
Yeah, no. I think these days, you know, it's cut the pretense and just call it a font if you want, call it a typeface if you want. You know, everyone knows what a font is. I think, you know, as designers, we like to use typeface, and maybe I do as well. But, mm-hmm. You know, if you talk to a client, it's probably, you know, they would understand what a font is more than a typeface. So,
yeah. Except let's just all agree that we don't call it writing. Because writing is what you write down with your pen, and that always bothers me as well. Like, it's a little pet hate, a little thing that I pick up on when someone says, oh, that's nice writing in that design. I'm like, it's not writing. Excellent. So yeah, I mean, I think the other point that would be great to kind of learn about is software and your process with software. Mm-hmm. I want to really come off this conversation today and like feel like I can go and start designing my own font. I really do feel quite inspired. I think, just like I say from before, just looking at your work and chatting to Liam, and Liam now started it. And obviously now if Liam's doing it, I've got to have a go as well. Otherwise, you know, it's not Ant and Dec, is it, Liam? You know, it's not the Ant and Dec of the design world. So we kind of want to, you know, experiment. I mean, what software do you use? Do you use some premium high-end stuff? Do you kind of recommend software that's better for people that are looking to start in font design?
When I was a graphic design student, I was using FontLab for some time because this is what the school gave us. Mm-hmm. But then they released the Retina screen. Apple released the Retina screen. I directly bought one. And the issue was that FontLab was not in Retina at the time. Mm-hmm. So I changed for Glyph, mm-hmm. actually. That's, I think, maybe half of type designer, they use it. And the other half, they use Super Polator. I don't remember the name exactly, but yeah, but maybe half or even more people are using Glyph, mm-hmm. From the German programmer, which I don't remember the name, but it's really a great software. It's very practical because actually you can... Compared to the first version of FontLab I was using, you can have all your masters in the same window. I mean, the masters, for example, this is what every different weights you design. For example, if you have a typeface with 7 styles from ultra thin, light, regular, medium, bold, and black, maybe you will have 4 masters, so it will be obviously the most thinner, the ultra thin, the black, and 2 in between, mm-hmm. or maybe 3, but let's say we have 4 masters. You design those 4 masters, and the 3 remaining whites, they are automatically generated.
Oh, wow, really?
So, yeah, exactly. This is why it works with interpolation, actually.
Wow.
It's... most of the time, the typefaces, they are just designed. They just designed ultra thin and black, and then everything else is generated. But of course, you need to correct every weights in between.
Just to make sure, yeah.
Yeah, it looks really bad if it's not corrected.
Mm-hmm. Okay, sorry, Liam. I was just going to say, when you correct stuff, like I think to a beginner, maybe they don't see those imperfections, but to somebody that's like yourself, who's a seasoned pro in this, like you would see those imperfections.
Yeah, even if you don't know much about typography, you will see imperfection. If you just generate it automatically between ultra thin and black, it will look very strange because the contrast in black, for example, is really big, and in an ultra thin typeface, it's very low. No, but for example, the horizontal bar will be 10 points in vertical, maybe 10 points in horizontal, the same then. Mm. And in black, it will be maybe 200 points in vertical bar and maybe 150 in the horizontal bar. And if you do the interpolation, it will be more obvious to see the contrast between vertical and horizontal. And I think the most obvious letters you can see the difference when it's interpolated and it's not corrected, it's in the letter A, if it's two stories A and E and S, and if it's not corrected, it will look very bad.
Mm. That is fascinating, though. That I wasn't aware that the software would generate them for you. Obviously, like you say, you have to go in and fix, but yeah, that's really because I've got I don't know if you've heard of it, FontSelf, which is a mm-hmm. extension for Illustrator. So obviously it's not at the level of Glyph. Basically, yeah, you make your letter forms, tell it what is A, B, C, D, you know, etc., and then you can set the kerning and things like that. It's only a cheap piece of software, but I think, yeah, for someone like me, just kind of playing, really, it's quite a good
And for a display typeface, it's a nice thing to have.
Yeah. So, do you have, like, when you are designing in glyphs, do you have like, or do you think it, I mean, I guess it is, but do you have a specific set of rules or kind of fundamentals that cannot be broken when creating, designing a font?
Rules like copying someone else's work, I don't know, but you mean technical rules or?
I guess technical and moral to a degree.
Yeah.
Yeah, moral, you don't steal other people's works. Mm-hmm. But you can always be, yeah, you always have to be influenced by other people's works. So once I release the typeface that looks a little bit like someone else's work, and I didn't copy from him, but the fonts after that was kind of close. Mm-hmm. But not similar. The curves were different, but the ID was quite similar. Mm-hmm. But I think otherwise, just spend a lot of time doing perfecting the shape, spending a lot of time to make everything clean. Spend a lot of time on kerning and the spacing, and obviously the kerning, because it's very important to do the kerning not only between letters and letters, but between letters and symbols, and between symbols and symbols. So in the end, you have thousands and thousands of kerning pair, because in books, for example, if the comma followed by a quote isn't kerned, sometimes it looks like there is a small blank mm-hmm. space. So it's better to kern everything.
And in the situation that you had, where you had some work that was released that was similar to another designer's, what happened? Was there did that designer contact you, or?
I don't think so. No. He never contacted me, and maybe nobody noticed that the work was similar.
But it happens. I mean, it happens to the best of us all the time. You know,
it can happen. Yeah.
You know, you're saying there's obviously thousands of variants for the spacing kerning. How long does that, all of that kind of stuff take? Do you have like an estimate of how long those things take?
Yeah, it depends if your character set includes small caps, if it's a serif or sans serif typeface. Maybe some serif typeface, they can take a little longer, but I think it takes weeks. Mm. If you do this, and then generally just work a few days, and then I come back like 1 month after and I look again.
Okay, yeah.
And I just have a proof sheet of a text in different languages. It's very important to have like in Polish or Czech language, because in Eastern Europe, they have a lot of accents. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to see how the letters interact with each other with every different accents, because obviously in English you don't have this issue, and in French and German they don't have so many accents. Mm-hmm.
So if the kerning and spacing part takes weeks, what's the whole process? I guess it's months, years.
No, just more weeks, because the spacing, The drawing of the typeface takes maybe more time than the kerning and spacing, but the spacing is part of the drawing. Mm-hmm. But the kerning is maybe a few weeks, and the drawing and the whole process before is also a few weeks, but maybe a bit more. Mm-hmm.
So quite long then, in comparison to designing something. I think that's...
Yeah, it just depends if you make a display typeface or a text typeface, because display sometimes it doesn't take so much time. You can even design one that works in maybe 1-2 weeks if you go very fast, and you have maybe only the capital letters, and the kerning is very simple. Mm. And you don't have Cyrillic or...
Yeah.
Yeah. Like most typefaces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It'd be good to... I know Kaz and I have had kind of conversations privately in the past about kind of licensing, because you know, you go on a website and you buy a font,
mm-hmm.
and lots of maybe younger designers might think that, you know, you can just buy a font and use it with for whatever you want. But sometimes there is very small details in the, you know, in the terms and conditions, the license, that it can't be used for a logo or a trademark. And we do feel it is a bit of a minefield kind of area. There's lots of gray areas. Do you have much knowledge about the licensing world?
Yeah, actually the license from my website is very similar than the one from my fonts and the other website, because I didn't want to have something too different.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I want that the people who buy from me directly or from my fonts or the other channels, they are all quite similar, because the license from my fonts, I think it's quite simple. You need to read, obviously, but I think you can use the typeface in a logo, but it just depends if everyone on the company will use the typeface on their computer or not, because if it's the case, they will have to buy, obviously, the license for a lot of users. Or if you buy a license for web fonts, it depends of how many visitors you have per month.
So once you've kind of designed the logo, so your fonts, for example, are all good for designing logos, and designers can take those fonts, create them as outlines, and manipulate them, and you know, make designs from those fonts.
Yeah, it happened a few months ago. There was one designer who asked me because I just took the same end user license agreement and my fonts, and they was asking me if because in this license agreement there was one sentence that says that the designer they can't modify, like you said, they can't modify the letter forms. But in my own license, I just removed this line. So if people they buy from me directly, they can do this kind of modification. I wanted to make it easier for everyone.
Because it's quite common. It's quite common for a designer, in order to create a logo design that is relatively unique, we have to sort of manipulate the letters once they're created as outlines. And I think I almost get a little bit frustrated with the licenses, because I feel like there's some people out there that are creating this stuff, selling it, and then going, do you know what, you can't do it for this and this,
of course,
you know, here's a whole load of things that, you know, we want to try. And it feels like the idea of catching them out doing something wrong is become more of the motive in the creating of that original piece than actually creating something to serve a community or serve a design industry. It feels like that the idea of catching somebody out is almost become priority. I especially find it with like stock libraries and licenses around that. I must admit, the font world does frighten me a little bit. I mean, I use Adobe fonts because I feel that they're quite clear about stuff. You know, nobody wants to kind of do the wrong thing, and everybody wants to make sure everybody sort of like gets their fair share. And, you know, I think designers feel a little bit overwhelmed when it comes to licensing. It'd be great to, like, you know, if I could go on a crusade to kind of save the design realm of make it more obvious what you can and can't do. It would be amazing. I think it would be good to do that with not just fonts, but also images and licenses around that. But
yeah, exactly.
Because they're advertising free font or big font bundle, and then when you come to go and look at the font bundle terms and conditions, it's like you can't do anything, and you think this is misleading. To me, it's quite wrong. But I think, you know, it's good to know your licenses aren't like that. And I mean, and I'm hoping that the listeners of the C3 Design Podcast who are listening to this episode are going to kind of look at the site. And I mean, there's so many awesome fonts there that would look great as logo designs. I mean,
I would
have a field day designing logos with your fonts because they're just brilliant. It kind of brings me on to another point about sort of manipulating the fonts. You know, designers, it's commonplace. It happens. It's what we do. You know, we're designers, so we'll manipulate the font. But do you find that sometimes, how do you feel about designers manipulating the letter forms and stuff? Not in so much in regards to, do you mind them doing it? More regards to, they might create something that looks unique, but then once they've changed the letter forms, does that then throw off the typography? Does it kind of grate on you,
break
if that
the
makes
rules.
Sense? Break the rules.
Like break the rules.
Yeah, for me, it's generally there's no problem because the typeface, you know, they need to be used for a purpose. So if the designer, they can't do everything they want with the typeface. But it depends. There's just one thing I don't like people see is that if they change the spacing of script typeface for the static script, because generally you see it very often, because this typeface, the static script, the point is that every lowercase is connected to each other, and if you change the tracking, if you increase or decrease it, it will be completely, it will look wrong, and it will completely break the purpose of the typeface. But modifying letter shape, I don't know, making the E larger, it happened to one of to my radical with a client. They can do this. But generally, the agencies or designer, they contact me before and they ask me if I want to do this those changes myself, and generally I say yes. For example, even changing the dots on the I by you know, it's generally circle or square. If they want to change it to a triangle, it looks different, but why not? If this is what they want in their design,
I would do it. So that's quite cool. So a designer could go away, create a logo, for example, make a modification to the I, and then they can go, right, now we want that logo type to now match the rest of the font. And they could contact you after they've done that and go, actually, can you create a font to match that? That's interesting. That's quite a good thing to do.
That's cool.
That is cool. And with open type licenses, you know, things like Google Fonts, is that kind of a you can do what you want sort of thing?
I don't know much about the license about Google Fonts, actually.
No.
So, no, I don't. I have no idea, actually.
Okay, well, that's something we can always look into, Liam, and find out a bit more. Maybe we could reach out to Google Fonts and just see if they'd have a conversation with us, because I think, as well, that would be great. I mean, free fonts, there's some bad ones, isn't there? I've seen some dodgy free fonts. have you come across free fonts and just thought, they're not great?
It happens many times, but there are also interesting free fonts. But generally, you have always issues with maybe spacing or other details. But the thing that the fonts by that are not that you have to buy, you have the support generally, like you can contact the designer and they can do a work for you to modify existing letters and
for the free fonts. They're kind of, that's the caveat, isn't it? I guess if you use a free font, the designer would like you to kind of, you know, be quite direct with them and now that makes sense.
So, obviously, you've got Newtype Foundry. How did you progress from just designing type to starting your own foundry? And also, where did the name come from?
Well, for the name, it's very simple, because in my name, Nico Innocento, there are a lot of O. So, and it starts with N, and I thought no type sounded good, so I chose this this name. Mm-hmm. And what was the other question already?
How did you progress from just designing type to actually starting the foundry?
Ah, yes. I started the type by making typeface when I was still a student, and in 2013 I contacted my fonts and I submitted my first typeface to them, which was based on my calligraphy but modified, and we launched the typeface in February or March 2013. And some people, they bought it, and I made another other typeface, a sans serif version of it, and more people bought it. And then a few years later, I created my website, NoType. It was in 2016 that the website was released. So 3 years late after, I started selling them on my phones, and mm-hmm. Yeah, still people buying my fonts from the beginning.
That's amazing. Mm. And really, how many fonts did you start NewType with? How many fonts did you have?
At the beginning of the foundry, or?
Yeah.
When I launched the website, I think I had like 8 typefaces family. Mm-hmm. And now it's approximately maybe 10, but... I did a lot of other things in between, because I had other projects with friends, because we are launching another foundry with Cyrillic.
Right.
And I do a lot of Cyrillic right now. Mm-hmm. I want to extend all my typefaces in Cyrillic.
Yeah.
This is the end goal, because, you know, every year there may be thousands of new Latin typefaces only, mm-hmm. maybe only a few hundreds in Cyrillic, and it's an interesting market, because I went to Belgrade and Moscow, and I visited these two cities, and it was interesting to see all the Cyrillics, how they are used, mm-hmm. and all how the new generations they see this, because in Moscow everyone uses Cyrillic, but in Belgrade, the young generation, they are more like they prefer Latin, actually, because Serbia, you know, it's mixed between Cyrillic and Latin, and generally it's the Cyrillic is more for older generation, mm-hmm. because of course the youngs they prefer the something more international.
Mm-hmm. So being that Cyrillic being foreign to yourself, do you work with kind of people, you mentioned Belgrade, do you work with people out there that are type designers that you collaborate with, or how does that work?
Well, actually, there was a company that hired a Russian type designer to improve my Cyrillic, because they wanted this typeface used for their new identity. Mm-hmm. So I improved my Cyrillic thanks to them, because they hired this Russian type designer, Konstantin Lukianov. Mm-hmm. And it helped me to improve my Cyrillic, and now I think it's better than before. But there are so many informations on the web, on the internet right now about Cyrillic. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so much resources. You can find every details about almost every letters, how to design them.
Yeah.
And you can contact Russian or Eastern Europe designer specialist in Cyrillic if you want to.
I have I've got some Bulgarian friends, so if you ever need mm-hmm. if you ever need them to look at something,
then it's always important, because the Cyrillic Bulgarian is different than the basic Cyrillic. And for all my typefaces, I always do the Bulgarian version too. Mm-hmm. It's they have the same Unicode than Russian Cyrillic, normal Russian Cyrillic, but it's just some shape of letters they changed. So it's I think it's important to have them too.
Yeah. Yeah.
That sounds like really good ambition, and I think it just adds to the growth. I mean, it's definitely kind of opened my eyes to the amount of effort and work that goes into creating a font typeface. One thing that must really bother you, and I think it's something that must be really hard to police, is when you get fonts that are just shared across different systems. I mean, is there even a way to police that? I mean, how can you know whether somebody has purchased your font if you saw it, say?
I don't know. Actually, I don't do much against this. No. But Monotype, they often contact me about big clients they're working with, and they ask me if the client bought me a typeface directly, or because and I say generally yes or no, and if it's not the case, generally they will Monotype, they will say them that you have to buy the right license, mm-hmm. because maybe they didn't buy the right license and they use the wrong shouldn't use this typeface in this way, mm-hmm. but I think I don't want to do the police about this, because I think someone said you should put more effort to make people wanting to buy your phones than fight against piracy or everything.
Absolutely. And I think as well that knowing that, I think supporting a foundry, a type designer, it's important, because we need that, the longevity of capitalism, mm-hmm. we need to support people, I think it's just something that it's rife more so in the font world, probably more so less obvious with older fonts, to know whether somebody's purchased the right license, especially with the Helvetica's and the Futuras and things like that, because they're just everywhere.
But the most popular fonts on my fonts, for example, like in the bestseller, if you look at it, there is like Helvetica or Futura. Mm. The original designers, they are dead, but there are still a lot of people buying them because it's of course they are very popular, but I think it's also because some companies at a certain size they have to buy the right license, because of course there are a lot of people who pirate these fonts, but a company of a certain size, if they don't buy the right licenses, it will go wrong for them, because they don't want to spend more money on a lawyer than on a license.
Yeah,
on
a font.
Especially in US, though, yeah.
Yeah, and I guess for a big company, if a font is even thousands of pounds, it's not a lot of money to them. It's a good investment.
Yeah, nice.
It's a good investment.
Absolutely.
One thing I was thinking of is it must be amazing, when you see your fonts in use. How do you feel, and where have you seen it used and things like?
Often in the library, I always buy the typeface. The book containing my typeface. Once it was a cooking book, and I never cooked anything in this book, but there was my radical typeface inside. So
that's awesome.
It was nice. And once it was in Paris, I was walking and there was one restaurant using a Devinil typeface, and I stopped there to eat. It was 3 years ago, before COVID. And recently, I love this one because there was a Kickstarter watch using Radical again.
Oh, wow.
And I directly contacted the guy from Paris, and I ordered two watches.
Amazing.
Because it's a mechanical. It's really the kind of watches I like. I love it to see my stuff used this, because this is what makes the font alive. I want to say, because if a typeface is not used, it's not dead. No, it's not dead, but it's not
It's kind of pointless if no one uses it.
Yeah, exactly.
I do think the radical typeface is, for me, just like, I love that. Is that what your logo's done in?
My logo?
Yeah. What logo? What typeface have you used for your logo? New type.
You know, it's a custom typeface that only contains new type letters.
Ah,
cool.
That's awesome.
Cool. Yeah. That's awesome. Really, that's really cool.
It sounds like the best ingredient in the cookbook was actually your font. To
That's brilliant. So,
yeah. And you've, and I learned also from the Typo Circle interview that you've actually designed a font for Bugatti, or you've modified your one of your designs for Bugatti. That is that's astounding, because you know the level of company that Bugatti is, you know, we could only dream to work for them. Like, how did that project come about?
No, actually it's because Bugatti, one agency in Berlin, there was one, their art director, he used my typeface for a personal for one of his personal projects. He bought it and he really liked the typeface and he wanted to do something based on that. So he contacted me and I directly went to Berlin and we met, and I met the Bugatti team and we started working on it. And actually the some ideas for the modification, we found them together. It's not just me, it's the whole team, you know, some graphic designer from Bugatti, their designer, even the marketing director was there, I think. And we had a workshop together, and we had ideas to modify a few some shapes, some forms, some letters. And after that, I just had to find maybe a few different letters forms. And basically, I just I did mostly the technical parts. So it was how they found my typefaces were on my fonts, I think.
Ah, amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, awesome. And
it's really nice. I like the way in the interview you explained how the curves on the S take the curve from the, I think it was the Chiron.
Yeah, exactly.
The Chiron Bugatti has this really nice curve where the door is.
Yeah.
So I love that attention to detail there. And even like the capital G, if listeners go onto your Instagram, scroll down a bit, there's your bright blue background with a capital G, and it looks like it looks kind of like an icon for a helmet, almost like if you imagine like a racing helmet.
That's right.
So it's all these little things that connect to the brand. That's a really nice touch.
And where are they going to be using this typeface? Are they using it on their print, on their website?
Unfortunately, they had a new director and they throw away the whole project.
Wow.
Oh, no.
But everyone was paid. So, you know, it's okay. It happens very often, I think.
Yeah.
Are you allowed to share the work, as in, you know, like, or are you allowed to sell the font at all, or?
Sell the font? No, never.
Yeah.
It just, but I didn't sign like NDA that I can't show the works if I want. You know, just.
So that's good.
Just I keep just the files for myself, and they are interesting. So
yeah. It makes sense.
Yeah.
But I will never sell it. No.
Kind of talking about cutting edge design in regards to, you know, the Bugatti. I mean, what a car. It's awesome. They also do great watches, don't they? I mean, they've got some pretty cool watches, mechanical watches based on the engine, haven't they? Variable fonts. Is that kind of like the supercar of the font world?
Variable fonts, they are very interesting. Actually, as we most type designer, we work with Glyph, and different masters, it's very easy to generate variable fonts. Currently, if someone wants to buy me a variable fonts, they just have to buy the whole family, and they if they ask me the variable variable file, I will generate it. It's not so difficult because it's just basically a few verification to do and export the font again with the new with Glyph. So it's not. But what's very interesting with those variable fonts, for example, is how a typeface can be applied on the different dimensions, you know. And this is what makes it very interesting. The typeface, the same file can be more condensed if the window is more condensed, for example. So it's very interesting. But right now, there's not so many people who use it, I think. But in the future, I think I will just include it with my family.
Right. Yeah.
Because in some foundry, it's just twice as expensive than just a family. I don't know, but I don't know for everyone. But for me, I don't think I will make it more expensive. Just if someone buy the whole typeface, the whole family, they will have the variable font.
I like your thinking behind. This kind of thing, like you've said stuff previously about licensing and things like that, because I think you sound very fair. It's
But you know, for example, for the Cyrillic, it's the same price. Some foundry they make the Cyrillic version more expensive than Latin only, but when I update the typeface, they will always be the same price than just Latin, because the Eastern European graphic designer, they don't have as much money than, for example, in the West. So I don't see if it makes sense to make the fonts more expensive. So
yeah, because it will turn people away. You'd rather people use it, buy it, and use it.
I think the most important thing is to make the fonts available for most people and as possible. Because, but I don't think I will ever do Asian type scripts, you know. Or Arabian is so different, because Cyrillic, it shares a lot of similarity, and but the others is so different. I don't know if I can do this.
Yeah, that makes sense. It would be good if people go on your Instagram. I'm holding one in my hand now, the specimen book.
Oh, that looks cool.
So for every font, you do a different specimen book, and you do kind of different finishing. Like, the design of this is next level.
Oh, it looks wicked.
And the ones I've seen, you know, like Divinal with the die-cut cover.
One thing about this is, actually, when people, I think maybe 99.9% of people, they buy my fonts from Monotype, from my fonts, everything, everywhere. But it's very rare. Sometimes there are people who buy directly from my website, and if they buy the whole family, they receive the specimen book about the font.
Amazing.
So this way I made this specimen, just to promote my work and to give a bonus to people who buy directly from me.
Oh, it looks so good. Yeah, it's really nice. It looks like an awesome piece of design. I lost my train of thought because I just saw Boss 7 on your. I can see the watch that you mentioned earlier in the podcast that uses your typeface, Radical. Watches. Is it Fugue watches?
Fugue
watches. Yeah, it looks really cool.
Yeah, it's really nice. It's like the second, the minute hand is like a floating. Because actually, it's not a real hand. It's a printed hand on the glass.
Yeah, and then, okay, brilliant. No, that's really cool. And in that blog section, you've got a section there that says fonts in use, and people can see how your fonts have been used. And, you've got them examples in logo design, in print. I think that I'm quite excited because I feel like I really want to start using your fonts for something design related. So let's see if I can get some budget from my clients and, look to get something a little bit more special, I think. Awesome. So where can people find you, Nico? Obviously, you've got newtype.com. It's spelled N-O-T-Y-P-E.com. And Instagram, same handle, is it?
The handle of Instagram is newtypefonts.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Excellent. So yeah, go and check out Nico's amazing work. I'm sure you'll be impressed.
Oh, sorry, Liam. I didn't mean to cut you up there. No, I was just saying, like, you know, whilst we were chatting, I thought it'd be a good opportunity to scribble out a couple of letter forms. So I've done an E and an N. So maybe that is the basis of a new typeface that's coming my way. Maybe I'll set up a foundry under Nico's wing. I don't know. I think you could train me. No, absolutely fascinating world. Definitely kind of like the ingredients that the designers use. It's like, it's almost like the scientific biology, the atoms and the cells that create the design.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
it's really interesting stuff. And I hope that we can keep and stay in touch because I think, you know, just talking to you now, seeing your work, you know, seeing the specimen book and I think it's nice to see somebody that's in it, who's fair and is passionate and excited by seeing their fonts being used. So it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, Nico.
It has.
Yeah, it was nice to talk to you too.
Appreciate that.
Yeah, it's really insightful. So sure, people are going to learn a lot.
Yeah.
Which is great. So thank you so much.
We'll have to get together for a part two sometime.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe if we...
Yeah, fantastic.
Or if ever you're in the UK... Give us a shout, or if we're in Switzerland, where exactly in Switzerland?
Neuchâtel.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Like between Geneva or Zurich, and Zurich it's a little bit in between. And you in UK?
Well, you're not far from London, are you, Liam?
No, and I'm like half an hour from London,
and I'm half an hour from Cambridge.
Okay.
So yeah, we're both sort of like south of the UK. We definitely have to meet up. I think it would be good to arrange that. A trip in London around the galleries.
Yeah, I would love to.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure and I can't wait to hear what the listeners think and the reaction. Look forward to keeping in touch and thanks again for joining us on this episode.
Thanks.
Thanks ever so much, Nico. Bye for now.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye.